Welcome back again, everybody, to the Trivers Podcast. The Comic Book Club. Now we are finally recording. Nathan, press the record button.
Yes, I did.
The Comic Book Club, where we read a different trade paperback every single week. I'm Daniel, you're Nathan, we're brothers. We're on a call.
Yes, we are.
Video call. Now, video call. Reread comics.
We're not exclusively freaking audio anymore.
We're almost done with the news, and Nathan didn't realize he's recording video.
We're damn professionals over here, okay? So, yeah, we're on a call, a little hungover, but still excited about comics.
Oh, yeah. You ever read comics after drinking?
I've tried. Yeah. But typically it's like late at night, and whenever, if I read comics at night, sober, I'm falling asleep. You know what I mean? So, if I manage to get my drunk ass to like open up a comic book, I'm definitely falling asleep.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah. Have you?
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Nope, doesn't work.
We got different time codes in our description. We got the book, which is Last of Us, American Dreams. We got Back Matter Matters in the poll list, but we start with the news. It's only been a couple days since our last episode. We're kind of doubling up.
Yeah.
Before a little one shows up. So we've been reading twice as many comics, actually.
So not a whole lot of hot news. Dana, if you like looking at chairs, do I have a live stream for you?
Well, it's not live anymore. There's now a five-hour video somewhere.
You can still look at the video.
Oh, a feature.
Kilala just came in.
A celebrity appearance.
She wanted to say hi.
Can you pick her up and put her in the camera? That'll be your thumbnail. It's like zooming in on your face. Hello, Kilala. Can you make her bark?
No.
Whoa. Sophia's peeking in. She's not doing her schoolwork.
She doesn't fuck with this.
She doesn't fuck with podcasts.
No, she doesn't. Not ours. Definitely not. Maybe better ones. Serious Issues, maybe.
Anyway.
What were we saying? You like to look at chairs?
I
got a
chairs.
5-hour video for you.
Could be cooler chairs.
Yeah, there's a bunch of cast announcements for Avengers Doomsday. Nothing really too crazy. Ian McKellen's coming back, though. So there's going to be some... The X-Men are going to be sent off again. For like the third time?
I think maybe Sony. Fourth time, yeah.
Maybe fourth time? I don't know. But that's kind of cool, I guess. I don't know. This one's not going to make as much money, for sure, right?
I think this is all looking bad. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know why they feel the need to just make headlines, you know, about a movie that comes out next year. You know? Right. I'd love for all this to be a surprise. You know, I'm like, holy fuck, Alan Cumming's back, and he's Nightcrawler again. Like, old man Nightcrawler.
They got Ian McKellen
yeah.
to come back and put on a big helmet.
Yeah.
Or James Marsden. Like, that would have been cool, I think.
Because, like, I think at a certain point, knowing all these little details was something that you would find if you're really digging for it. But now it's, like, all forced on us.
Yeah.
Like, actually impossible to go in blind. Like, I'll watch it. But none of this is making me more excited for it. And it's going to be a fucking shit show with like these hundreds of characters that they're just throwing in there. No one's getting to get enough screen time for it to be satisfying, you know, unless it's like a 4-hour movie.
Yeah. Unless you kill half of them pretty soon, you know,
maybe it'll be
hard
just,
to focus.
Maybe it'll just be a thing where they're on screen for like, I don't know, a minute or something until they get blown up or something. But
I hope so. So yeah, Doomsday probably gonna be a mess, but if they pull it off, that'd be kind of crazy. So I'm just kind of interested to see. But I think they kind of know that people like us will just watch it, and so maybe they're just trying to pull people in with nostalgia bait that like wouldn't have gone and normally seen it. The Mondays, you know?
Yeah. Did you watch
whatever
The Electric State?
No.
Oh.
Did you?
Yeah. So.
Whoa.
I watched it like a year ago.
What?
Because of like the review thing that Sarah's a part of. And I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was fine. Like 3 stars or whatever. I put a lot of notes, you know, to make it better. Clearly, they didn't listen to him.
They didn't listen to Daniel from the Trade Waiters podcast.
Yeah, they should.
did you see a version that like wasn't completed with like effects?
Yeah, a lot of the animated stuff was like a skeleton of like what it is, or it's not like fully rendered.
Mm.
So I like got the gist of like what happened.
They're going for,
you know, but I bring that up because the Russo brothers are kind of.
They're missing.
They're having some misses, you know?
Yeah.
But maybe they're only good at, like, adapting stuff. So we'll see.
Yeah, you know, that's probably true. Like, a lot of people like Zack Snyder's Big 2 stuff, or I guess DC stuff, but not really his original stuff. But sometimes people, like, if you kind of put them into something that's established, they're good at making creative choices with those, but just kind of creating something from the ground up might be a little bit more difficult. I don't know.
Seems hard.
Like Russo Brothers might be one of those.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I'll fucking see it if I gotta. But you know, I'm becoming more and more open to missing Marvel stuff as it comes out. So we'll see.
But we're not gonna, because they're pretty few and far between.
Few and far between. Yeah. There you go, Daniel. Exciting news.
Okay.
Absolute Martian Manhunter has been extended to 12 issues.
Nice.
I think it was originally 6. So apparently, the popularity of the first issue. Got it to extend to 12, and hopefully it's not weird for everybody involved.
It's weird that they announced that like the day it comes out, because they know how many are ordered like a month ago.
Yeah,
you know, so
I guess they were like, if nobody goes in store to pick it up that didn't pre-order it, then like we're not continuing this shit. But obviously that's not realistic. So it was also a big week for comics, like that week, or I guess last week.
Yeah,
and
a lot of number ones,
you know. Yeah, there's like Batman Hush shit,
yeah,
coming out, you know, the James Gunn book that came out, you know, a lot of big things. Maybe they were like, if it gets kind of swept under with everything else, then maybe we won't continue it. But
yeah,
it's good, man. I don't know if you read it, but man, I got words.
Okay, we'll talk about it.
So we'll talk about it on the poll list.
Nathan, new war comic. True War Stories, an illustrated military anthology of American service from the Vietnam War to today. Transcribed and edited by Alex DeCampi and Iraq War veteran Kai Kumbar. So
that's pretty cool.
True Stories, which I'm pretty stoked on.
Yeah, that seems cool. We did a month of war comics and that shit. You know, that there's so much variety.
Yeah.
Kind of in like war comic, like the way it can
be
told.
Be like all the same, essentially. But no,
yeah,
just like...
You'd think we would have seen some of the same tropes in like the four books that we read, but they all seem like pretty drastically different. Even though two of them were like during the Vietnam War, like they were told so differently from each other. So
yeah, definitely.
So pretty cool. Daniel, new Marvel video game, Marvel Cosmic Invasion. It's going to be from the developers of the team that made TMNT Shredder's Revenge. So it's going to be like a two-dimensional side-scroller thing where you're fighting some of the aliens in Annihilation Wave, and you can play as Spider-Man, Captain America, Storm, Nova, Wolverine, and Venom. And that's going to release to PC and consoles holiday 2025. But that seems pretty fun.
Nice.
Like those arcade cabinets type shit. I haven't played the TMNT Shredder's Revenge, but Sophie really wants to. So maybe I'll check it out.
I played like a 90s one at like an arcade bar. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are fucking hard too.
Yeah.
But you know, I think the world needs more couch co-op type games. They're always pretty fun to just have and play. So
I guess Split Fiction like broke a couple records, and one of them was like biggest like opening weekend performance. Yeah,
that doesn't surprise me, man. I mean, It Takes Two won like Game of the Year
at
the Game Awards, and you know, obviously it was like really good. So
definitely
pretty cool.
Yeah, I love a co-op. It really tests my relationship, you know? It doesn't make it stronger at all.
It crumbles slowly.
Nathan, Dr. Aphra, Agent of Chaos, or Chaos Agent, coming June 18th. New series. I don't know anyone on the team, but... And in other Star Wars news, we got Hyperspace Stories, Tides of Terror, which is a...
That sounds cool.
A horror book, I guess, featuring Kit Fisto.
Whoa, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was like, hell yeah, dude, it's about time.
We need some more fist in our life, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir. That's
cool. Oh, man, I like Kit Fisto. So that'd be kind of cool to see him do something other than just get demolished.
Yeah, July 16th. I always thought Kit Fisto was like the coolest looking Jedi.
Easily.
Yeah, I have a Black Series Star Wars figures of Kit Fisto. Cool. I think he's nice. Cool.
I have a Kit Fisto card from the Star Wars Unlimited card game.
Less special, but...
A little bit more rare.
Nathan, Battle Beast, the new Invincible spinoff series...
Of course.
...has 400,000 copies pre-ordered.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So, I don't even think FOC has hit yet. But I guess, like, Discussing Film, like, posted that.
Oh, dang.
And, like, why do you care? like, Invincible's not a film, and you're posting about, like, comics right now. But, yeah, Invincible buzz is crazy.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I never even thought how the, you know, FOC would kind of line up at the end of the, was it third season?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Robert Kirkman, man, he's a businessman. That's for sure.
He sure is.
And really cool to see Ryan Otley back on just that character, you know? So,
yeah.
I'll probably pick it up. There'll probably be some just general Invincible spoilers, I imagine, but I'm going to read that shit anyway.
I think it is like the time between when he left Machine Head's office in the first season when he shows up and is like at that Viltrumite prison.
Oh, okay.
So it's a time between.
That probably makes sense too, because I assume Kirkman and Notley are like, we probably shouldn't put anything that spoils past where the TV show is going to be at the time. So
I mean, people fucking can YouTube like everything that's going to happen until the end, you know? So
yeah, true. But some people don't want to know, you know?
Yeah. So. Anyway, Nathan, what book did we read this week?
We read The Last of Us, American Dreams by Neil Druckmann, who I think is the game director of the game, and Faith Aaron Hicks, who does the art on this book, and then Rachel Rosenberg, I believe, does the colors. Let me look.
Faith Aaron Hicks is the artist who's doing that Mummy book that just came out from Universal Monsters.
Yeah, I looked up what other things she's done, because I really enjoy kind of her style in this book especially. It's a little bit different than what you'd think would be in like an apocalypse type book. And she has a very established, like, independent writing and drawing in both career.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I like her style. It gives like YA. It's kind of like Clementine feeling, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought that was, I thought this looked like how it should, you know?
Yeah, totally.
There's not a lot of Last of Us comics, so.
Yeah. Have you played the game? I can't remember. You have the PlayStation, right? So have you played it at all?
No, I haven't, but I haven't played it.
Okay. I mean, I don't have a PlayStation, and I played like 2 or 3 hours of it at like a friend's place. So I don't really know that much about it. Definitely most of the knowledge of The Last of Us I have is from the show.
Mm-hmm.
But this is still super enjoyable. I don't really know where this kind of lines up timeline wise, probably just before. Actually, they tell you
this is
the story takes place before the events of the game The Last of Us. So that's a helpful first page.
Yeah.
But I think this is like,
you'd read that.
This is definitely like such an interesting concept. And it's cool that the game director, Neil Druckmann, was the guy that I assume would help put this together and kind of flesh out a story that feels different than what the game is, you know, because it does feel very YA. And so it's kind of interesting having it framed in that way. But I thought this was good.
Rather than the rights being sold to like whoever, and then someone just trying to like figure out what would happen before without actually affecting anything.
Yeah.
But this is a pretty easy read. A nice one to stack on top of our normal reading lineup.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that, you know, it says written by Neil Druckmann and Faith Aaron Hicks. So I assume most of the, like the comics, like scripting and like the words is probably Faith. But
yeah,
you don't really see that happening a lot where sort of a creative in like a different industry is writing a comic book where they're collaborating with like a writer artist, you know? I feel like it's normally like the James Gunn thing. It's like you probably collaborated with Tim Seeley, you know, and was like, here's what I want for the story. And then Tim Seeley just goes and does the work, like the, you know, the story for it.
Yeah,
plotting and stuff. But this one's interesting because he's actually working with like a writer artist, and I think that's an interesting dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, pretty good. So let's jump into it. So basically, the whole story is like based around Ellie, and it starts off with Ellie getting dropped off at like a military building. She doesn't really have any family there, and she just kind of has to be acclimated inside the city. And she gets picked on by a bully, but there's another girl named Riley that kind of like saves her and pushes the bully away. And then Ellie has a talk with the principal still, where they talk about the renegade group called the Fireflies that are outside the city. Later, she discovers Riley took her Walkman when she was saving her from the bully. So she goes to get that back. And then that night, Ellie finds Riley sneaking out of the city. And so she's like, take me with you, and then they escape, or they sneak out of the city together.
I really like the colors by Rachel Rosenberg.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you
it's like,
set her name up top.
It's a very refreshing just style in general for an apocalypse book. Like, and I think it works because it, like, taking the perspective of a child, and you kind of, like, have this artist that is very kind of YA with it, it's like, it kind of brings, like, an interesting atmosphere because everything's kind of depressing, but then still the art is like still pretty fun, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it does a good job of showing us like what she's going through and how maybe she didn't even know like a world before this. I don't know how like the breakout really like worked, but it seems like this is the only world that she's known, and that's like unfair.
Yeah, totally. And what I'm really impressed by is even though that her style is like kind of the YA kind of thing, like the environment, like everything in the background and all the ruins and stuff like that is really strong. There's a lot of graffiti on the walls and like kind of blood just randomly scattered over trucks, and there's bullet holes and shit like that. Like she has a really good attention to detail with like a lot of that.
Yeah, so good architecture and sweet. Stuff.
So, and I really enjoy the lettering of the whole book too, because on this page where Riley or where Ellie discovers Riley trying to like sneak out, there's like this whole page where, or there's like lettering where she can hear the footsteps like go past the door, and as the lettering like approaches the door, the thumps get louder, you know what I mean? And it's just like a really visual storytelling.
Yeah. And it's like
close, so you can like hear her walk past. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was kind of cool. There's like a part where when Riley like saves Ellie, Ellie's trying to practice the cool thing that Riley says so that like she can practice her lines so that when she needs to say something cool in the future, she's like ready for it. And I relate to that.
What did she say?
Because when Riley like stops the bully, she's like, I'm going to stomp on your fucking balls or something like that. And then like throughout the rest of the issue, Ellie's practicing that same line. And she's like trying to figure out how to like make herself seem tough. And I totally like, I relate to that. Sometimes if I'm going into some sort of social situation, I know someone's going to like mention something, I'll like think of a joke and then practice it. So that it really hits when the time I like try to think of a joke ahead of time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
working on your material.
Yeah, I gotta work on the material. I gotta have a quick five ready, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. At all times.
At all times.
Never know when you'll stumble into an open mic, you know?
Yeah, you never know. That'd be crazy if I just had like a whole 5 minute set. I feel like I could do a solid five at like an improv.
I don't think you do.
I think it would take me like a couple months to really, you know, clean up. But
to hash out 5 minutes.
to hash out 5 minutes. But I think, you know, if I make it good, it's good. So they escape the city, and the city is like militarized. People, like there's like a bunch of soldiers and stuff that protect it from the infected on the outside. But when they escape, dude, they hop the most giant fucking fence in the world on this last page of the issue.
Terrifying.
It's like that shit's over buildings, like that's how tall the fence is, and I'm like,
yeah, dude,
that's
how
dangerous.
Do you like get over and then get your feet back in to the like fence, you know?
Yeah,
without
and, like, how does
falling?
No one see you that like the amount of upper body strength, you know?
It was weird that one section of this fence didn't have the barbed wire.
Maybe something happened, you know?
Maybe
I don't know.
It's like
maybe it fell.
The whole camp is compromised basically.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, pretty solid first issue. What's also interesting about this book is that it's set in a world where there's like a bunch of infected, but you don't really see that very much. Like, there's not a whole lot of infected in this book. There's like three that you see.
I think it's...
But it's still very enjoyable.
Yeah. I mean, they get to that, you know, in the story.
Yeah, they do.
I think it's used where it's needed.
Totally.
You know, it's like... I think it's like a good story before it's a good zombie book, I guess. You know, mm-hmm. which I think is kind of important.
Yeah, it's kind of painting the picture of like the world, or like how people are interacting with each other, or like the different factions, you know what I mean?
And it also could be like early on, because I don't think the infected like are like the clickers or whatever they're called. So you have to like kind of, after a while of rotting, that's when they get like really freaky looking. But
I don't know. But issue two. So Riley admits that she doesn't want to join the military in the city when she turns 16. So she has a couple months to figure out what she wants to do and like where she wants to go outside the city. She's really into the idea of the joining the Fireflies. But so they go to an abandoned mall and we meet Riley's friend Winston, who's just like an old man that lives in the mall, in like a tent in the mall. And so Riley has Winston give Ellie a ride on his horse, just kind of around the mall, because Ellie's never ridden a horse before. But while they're doing that, Riley steals some of Winston's stuff. And when the horse ride ends, they hear an explosion just kind of outside the mall. Winston runs off, and then Riley hears over the stolen walkie-talkie that she took from Winston that it's Fireflies. So they run to go check it out.
I like got worried because they go into the mall and they like go into this arcade. I'm like, isn't this like an episode in the show? You know, I'm like, are we just like rehashing that? Or did the show take from this somehow? But they're only in it for like a second. And
yeah,
I think it's supposed to like be a teaser that they go back to it.
Maybe. Yeah. It's cool because they're in the arcade and they're geeking out over what's basically just like a Mortal Kombat cabinet, which I think is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Dude, when they're like jumping over, like they're like jumping across rooftops and stuff.
Like they're fucking these buildings
are, yeah, these buildings are fucking ginormous. Like they're jumping skyscrapers. You can't even see them in this picture. And I'm like, that they're just glossing over how this is like the most dangerous thing that they've done easily. Yeah, like jumping from a 10-foot skyscraper to another, or like a 10 to 20 story skyscraper to another one.
And they'll like drop down to like a lower rooftop, and it's like a 20-foot drop, you know?
And I'm like, how are they gonna get back?
What about their knees, you know?
Yeah. They're gonna ruin their knees by the time they're 16. They won't even be able to join the military.
Yeah.
So I thought that was funny.
I googled Winston to see if he's like a character that I like had seen before, but I guess he's like just, he shows up as like a picture in the game. Like they're, I don't know, the character is like walking in like a room somewhere, and there's a picture of Winston laying somewhere, and it's showing him, and that's like all that this is based off of, is just some picture of a guy.
Okay. I guess Neil Druckmann's like, you know, there's this one guy I didn't get a chance to get to it in the game. So let's do it now.
Wait, do you know when like The Last of Us is like set, like time wise?
It's like very near future. I think it's only like 20 years or something.
Then why doesn't she have like an iPod or something? Like,
good question.
She's just got like a Walkman, like, or like a cassette player.
I think the show might be set differently than like time wise in the game, because I just remember the show started with like that interview with the fungi scientist, and he's like, if the world, you know, happens to heat up a little bit more, then this type of fungi can survive. But I think the game is just like, you're kind of thrown in randomly. You don't really know why the infected are kind of starting, or like what kind of fungi it is.
Yeah,
at least that's just what I remember from the beginning of the game. You're just, what's his face? Joel, I think. And you're just having a regular ass time, and then your kid dies. So,
yeah.
But, you know, this part where they're kind of in the arcade is actually really sad, because you see Ellie trying to visualize what it would have been and how fun it would have been if she, you know, kind of grown up in a different time. And, you know, she's completely robbed of a childhood where she would have gotten to enjoy something like that. And it's told in such like a heartbreaking way. Because when she snaps back to reality, it's just in ruins and there's like dead bodies in there and shit.
Oh, there goes gravity. Yeah.
And so, but it is nice that Ellie gets to ride on a horse. I do like that.
Yeah, dude.
nice thing, you know. She's not afforded this kind of hobby or anything like that inside the city. So
yeah, I mean, I think she wanted to learn because maybe she'll need to ride a horse at some point. And I think she does ride a horse later, which is good.
She does in the show.
Yeah, that whole season is such a blur to me. I'm going to be needing that recap.
There's a part where Pedro Pascal gets shot or something, and so Ellie takes him on a horse to some other place. So she does end up needing to know how to ride a horse.
Right. I don't know if anyone was like, I actually know how to ride a horse, you know, because I think... I think people
I could figure it out.
Yeah.
I've ridden a horse before, but I don't remember how to do it. So I feel like if I needed to ride a horse, I could figure out how to...
You just like...
Tell him where to go.
Or whatever, and then that's it.
Or like kind of just like jerk to the right or jerk to the left, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's probably pretty intuitive. So Winston, he has a tent set up in the mall. And I feel like living in the mall is such a bad spot in an apocalypse to live. Because you'd either get snuck up on by just like random infected that walk in, or if there's just like people walking by, they're like, hey, let's see if we can loot that mall. Like over there, it's like a big building, you know, presumably. So if people are just walking by, they're like, let me go check that out.
I don't know if you'd like go to a mall for like resources.
There's like outdoor stores and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, true. Go to Shields.
Or like clothes. Yeah, go to Shields. Or like go to a.
But surely that'd been like. Ransacked already.
You'd think so, but you wouldn't know until you go in there. So I'm saying it's like a magnet for just people that are trying to loot stuff. Like even if you just find like a sweater to get you through like a cold season, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like it's worth checking out at least.
Yeah, like I'm just walking around in the apocalypse, like preparing for zombies in like a Gucci jacket.
Or like you're in the mall and you're just kind of looking for a sweater and you're like, do you think I should check the back and see if they have this in like extra large? You know? See if they have any extra sizes. But yeah, that's issue two. So we'll go to chapter three. And these covers, by the way, are incredible. I think they're Totino Tedesco.
Oh, I was like, these are fucking fire. What is this? Like, the signature is like a TT or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It is Julian Totino Tedesco, who's like, the fucking best cover artist ever. I don't know where he's at as well. I feel like I haven't seen his shit in a while.
Did he ever do interiors or just covers?
He's done a couple interiors. He's done a couple anthologies. He did a Spider-Man anthology when they had like one of the big numbers, and he did a story with Brad Meltzer.
Okay.
That was like a 4 to 8 pager, I think. But I don't think he's done any like long form comics.
Okay.
Which sucks because he's great. He just does covers.
Yeah, this chapter three one is like probably my favorite.
Yeah, super cool. But anyway, Ellie and Riley go to check out the source of the explosion that they heard in the mall. And they find some fireflies that are getting shot at by soldiers. Riley ended up taking 2 smoke grenades from Winston that she stole. So to help the fireflies escape, they throw the smoke grenades to create cover for them. And so those civilians run off. But then they're discovered by the soldiers. They start getting shot at. So they run off. And while they're hiding, they run into an infected woman that starts attacking them. Riley nearly gets bit, but they manage to kill the infected, and they try to escape more infected that are coming after them. But they get saved by a group of fireflies who call Ellie by name, and they're then both blindfolded and taken.
So we get to see a bit of like newly infected people and like kind of what that looks like.
It's very interesting because it's a much different design than the show, or I think even the game kind of takes. They look more zombie than like fungal.
It's essentially what it is, infected. You know?
Yeah, it is. But like, you know, you have like a little twist. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like in most zombie things, it's just like, oh, they came back alive and I don't really know why. But in this, they have an explanation of why corpses are running around. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But in this comic specifically, you don't really see, I don't know, mushrooms growing off of people's faces too much. They just kind of look like zombies, and I just thought that was interesting.
They definitely look like injured, but a cool thing...
They look undead, for sure.
A cool thing that they do is that they make, like, the background, like, this blood orange color when they're being, like, attacked, and it just, like, it just heightens, like, the intensity of the scene, and then as soon as, like, they, like, kill one or whatever, then it goes back to, like, blues and, like, the nighttime colors. And I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah, it's a good storytelling device, because when there's not much to focus on, like when you're looking at the panel, like the backgrounds and like bricks and stuff, there's a lot to sort of for your mind to sort of look at. But when the background's like one consistent color, you're focused more on like the fight itself, and you're able to process it a little quicker. So the pacing of it is changed like pretty drastically. And so the fight feels faster, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So she clearly knows how to lead like the reader's eye in like a really effective way.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wish that a lot of comics leaned into like action lettering as much as this book does, because it's so fun, like feeling the action in such like a big way. Because like with a lot of the, even like the gunfire and stuff, like you just see a lot of that. Or if there's big explosions, like the lettering takes up most of the panel, which is pretty fun. And it serves so much to create such a big moment. Even when they're getting attacked by the infected, like you hear like the screams or like the moans of like the actual infected, and it's like all green and stuff. I think it serves really well in this story.
One of my favorite sound effects is used, and what's her friend's name? Riley or something?
Riley.
She gets like tased, and then she falls on the ground, and it's just flump. And I think that's just like the perfect way to spell that out.
Flump like, is a very satisfying like lettering noise.
Yeah. And because that's just how I feel like it sounds like when I just like flop onto a bed or something.
Yeah. Yeah. They've nailed that one for sure.
Yeah. The like lady that's in this that mm-hmm. knows Ellie, is she from the show? Like,
yeah.
The first episode or whatever?
Yeah. That's Marlene.
Marlene. Okay.
Yeah, she's like the leader of the Fireflies in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she's a leader in this, or at least I didn't get that. She's like the leader of this little group, but I don't think she's the leader of like all of the Fireflies necessarily.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's in the show.
Okay.
So chapter 4, Ellie wakes up. She's like kind of tied down in a Firefly base. Marlene is there, who gives Ellie an envelope and tells her to open it when she gets back to the city. So They plan on letting them go just to go back. Riley gets denied joining the Fireflies when she says that she wants to join. There's like two guys, just random guys that show up, and they want to tax the Fireflies for using like their smuggler tunnel. And so it ends up just going into a shootout. Riley helps take out the two guys when she takes one of the men's guns and shoots them. And then Marlene, after like the shootout's done, Marlene threatens Riley to like scare her out of wanting to join the Fireflies. Ellie steps up to defend Riley and then, you know, defuses the whole thing. Then Marlene tells Ellie that her mother was called Anna and that she will probably tell Ellie more about her mother when the time is right. And so they let both Ellie and Riley leave and they just head back to the city. And Riley, like, she reads the note on her bed. But we don't get to see what the note is. So I'm a little, I'm pissed at that because I want to read what it says. But I assume it's part of the game or the show or something. So,
yeah.
Probably the game. I don't know when this was released. Was the show out when this was released?
Oh, I have no clue.
First print edition, October 2013. So a little bit before the show. That doesn't sound right.
I feel like yeah. Been... From Dark Horse.
Yeah. Is it 2013?
Yeah. Wow. So I guess a little after the games, I guess.
Yeah. Must be.
That's cool.
So that would even be before the second Last of Us, because I think that one came out in like 2016 or 18 or something.
They should do that more.
What? Sequels?
Like prequel comics?
Oh yeah, for sure. So, but this is like a good action scene shootout when the Firefly base happens. Like there's a couple pages of action that I think flow really well and really easily. Because like the dialogue goes silent, but it's like just a couple pages of like raw action and shootout, which I think is cool. Especially in a book that's only like 100 pages, they have a good amount of time dedicated to just like the flow of action, which is cool.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of was hoping for, I don't know, I wouldn't mind if this was like a little longer.
Yeah, know? Me neither.
And I think I was kind of hoping for like a bit more rather than just kind of little tidbits that come later, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe just like a, I guess Winston's kind of this character, but like a character that comes in, is like a part of it, and then is like just gone and not a part of the original thing, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Because
there's a good amount of those kind of characters, it seems like. Because like the show, to my understanding, really adapted more of like Nick Offerman's character in the show. Because in the game, he's just like a, he's kind of like a side character, but you don't really know that much about him. You just kind of know that his husband died. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
they definitely expanded on that.
They expanded that in like one of the most beautiful episodes of television I've ever seen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I cried that episode, dude. It was so sad.
Little bitch.
I was a fucking wreck. And I was like, this is so sad. And like, I was just so impressed by Nick Offerman's performance the whole time. But
yeah.
Yeah. But that, like, I think they have opportunity to do that in the comic, which I would have enjoyed to seeing a little bit more of. But
so she got like a knife that was like her mom's. Does she have like, does she normally have like a knife or something?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't know.
not that I remember.
I'll play.
She probably
it
does.
I'll let you know.
They put a lot of focus on just the switchblade, so I assume it's something that she's known to have.
Okay.
But, you know, there's a part where Marlene, like, threatens to, like, kneecap Riley for wanting to join the Fireflies, and I think that's a little crazy. Yeah, I figure she wasn't going to, but, like, the threat of it is wild.
Yeah.
Like, just shooting a child. But, yeah, and then when they go back in, when they go back into the city, are they climbing over the same fence, you think? It's not really shown, but I don't know why they would need to like jump around a bunch of rooftops to get out, but then to get in, they just like climb back the same fence, I guess.
I assume so.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the same way they came. You want to get into Back Matter Matters?
Yep.
Back Matter Matters.
So we got some concept sketches and designs by Faith Erin Hicks, so the artist of the book, and they're kind of trying to flesh out a general style, translating Ellie and Riley into the page. So it's pretty cool. And then there's a design for the arcade cabinet that they were kind of geeking out over, which is the Turning, I think is what the game is called.
Yeah.
And there's just like this character with like Wolverine claws type thing. So that's pretty fun too.
I thought that was like Riley with like claws.
Yeah, and I'm like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
That was like, kind of sick.
I missed that bit.
What an interesting apocalypse weapon that would be. Because you still have to get pretty up close to infected.
It's as useful as like a knife or like a hammer or something.
Yeah, pretty much. And then there's like initial ideas for like the promotion of this book, I guess. There's like a whole page where I guess Faith Erin Hicks was trying to flesh out the feel of like an apocalypse forest. And so it's just like Ellie walking around with like some ruins in the forest and stuff, and then just some promotional images. But I think this book would have been pretty awesome as like a black and white book too, just based off of that alone.
Yeah, definitely. The color does add to it, but I think
color is great, like, in this.
Yeah, her art alone is very impressive.
Yeah, but pretty cool. Not a huge back matter, but what would you rate this book, Daniel?
I'd rate it a stuffed mushroom, Nathan.
Ooh, nice.
My wife makes the best stuffed mushrooms, and
she does.
The only mushroom thing that I could think of at the time.
They're quick to eat too.
Yeah.
And I feel like I read this whole thing in like an hour. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
Stuffed mushroom is good. I'd give this like a mushroom pizza.
Nice.
You know, that's an underrated topping. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So especially on a pizza. And you know, this is an underrated book. This is an underrated genre, like Apocalypse YA, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because the only ones I've really read is the Clementine one and now this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoy both of them. I haven't read the second Clementine though yet. I think I have it somewhere.
Yeah. And I think 3 comes out this summer or something.
Hell yeah. But yeah, pretty good book. Overall, I really enjoyed it as a sort of normie Last of Us enjoyer. This shit's great.
Do you think any video games that have come out recently deserve like a prequel comic?
Elden Ring. I know there's a manga, but dude, I have no idea what the fuck is going on in that game. I'm lost constantly, but I know there's like, it's like one of those things where, you know, it's probably the deepest lore ever. There's probably like a 10-hour YouTube video explaining it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, maybe like Starfield. It's like from the people that made like Fallout.
Yeah, that could be cool.
Yeah, because there's a lot of like established things that your character's just kind of getting into, but it would be kind of cool to see a RPG style sci-fi thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Like space opera.
So let's get into the pull list. Poland.
Shove it in your box.
The pull list, the pull list. What did you shove in your box?
We got coming this week.
Dude, it's also another big week. I gotta like start making cuts.
That dude, I've been doing it this whole time.
man, because I plan on picking up Absolute Superman number 6, Ultimate X-Men 13,
14,
Absolute Green Lantern number 1's coming out. I didn't realize it was like this soon, but that's gonna be pretty cool. Daredevil, A Cold Day in Hell, which is like old man Daredevil with Charles Soule and Steve McNiven. So you gotta pick that up.
Yeah.
Resurrection Man.
Yeah.
Which I'm actually so excited for, but I'm so sad that it comes out this week because it's like such a big week.
Yeah.
I might have to cut Let This One Be a Devil because that the second issue comes out of that. But I actually was surprised at how much I enjoyed the first issue, so I want to give it another chance.
Yeah.
And then, or like another read. And then Godzilla Heist number 2. And I believe that's
heist,
everything.
Just cut Heist, dude.
I gotta cut Heists, I think.
And there's also Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe one last time.
I've seen it.
I don't know, man.
I've seen him kill the universe.
I might wait for the trail on that one. I don't think there's any value in getting the first one.
Yeah.
And I don't really itch for that sort of thing anymore.
Right.
I wanted to show you some stuff that I got.
Okay.
Give me a second, actually. And I got
you treated
the,
yourself.
Oh, I don't know if you can see that. The DC
no.
versus Marvel.
Way, that's awesome.
Yeah, dude, isn't that sweet?
What
look, that's
the
fine.
Fuck? How much was that? Like $100?
Yeah.
Damn. This Wait, has, that's so cool though.
This has all those like crossover issues, like the Batman and Daredevil stuff.
Oh, cool.
There's like a
Wait,
dark.
That's incredible.
Yeah, isn't that sweet?
Yeah, I'm so jealous actually.
Yeah, you could borrow it.
I will.
Because
for sure.
Like a lot of these are like hard to find. Like I looked at the list and then looked to see if I could just find them individually. And like you can't find them digitally or you have to pay a bunch of money for the hard copies. And so
right.
I'm like, no.
Yeah, no, that's a valuable one. Like especially since you can't find it digitally. Like if you decided like I really want to read the Daredevil Batman crossover, it'd be really hard to do.
They really should have omnibuses available digitally, I think.
They do.
Some of them.
Don't they?
Not like everything. Yeah, some things, yeah. But I bought that because the Amalgam one like sold out everywhere. And now it's like the price is like hiked up to like $100 more than it already is. And so I kind of got like cold or I got like sketched out. And so I bought that one.
Yeah. I think something like that, you definitely just kind of have to rip it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because it was, like, so long since, like, those came out, you know, and they're just so far out of print. And it was, like, a lot of those things you just kind of, like, heard about, you know, like the crossover and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then especially all the amalgam stuff. So I just kind of, I got, like, FOMO, you know?
And yeah, totally.
And then with, like, enough grinding and searching on eBay, I got the amalgam one, too.
No way. What?
It's got a Jim Lee cover.
Dude, that's absurd.
With the Dark Claw.
Yeah, Dark Claw.
It's got the same kind of like spine with like the characters on it.
Whoa, dude, that is crazy shit.
Yeah, dude.
Wait, how much was that? How much did you have to pay for that?
So this has the DC versus Marvel issues and then all the amalgam issues. So I was like searching the auctions on like eBay and the new ones, you know, like were selling for like $250, you know, and I just like made sure I searched every day for it.
Yeah.
And this one has like a bit of damage like on the cover, like
the
dust cover,
like the
and so the dude sold it as used. And so I got it for like the cover price, but it's like used, and I'm like,
nice.
I'm okay with that.
That's great.
You
I
know.
Yeah. I wouldn't have even noticed.
Yeah. And so like I had been looking at those since they came out like in the winter, and I'm like, that's cool. I might get that someday, you know?
Yeah.
And then when you like check again and it's just like gone and just like unavailable, you're just like, oh, what the fuck happened? Bad. You know?
Yeah.
And so I had more of like an urge to get it once there was like the opportunity, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So
that's
pretty fucking
that's pretty sick.
I got them like last week. So I was hiding them, you know?
I was going to look around your fucking house.
I don't know. I didn't want to have them like obvious anywhere, you know? So
it would be funny if you put them up and just waited for me to like notice them and see how long that would take.
I mean, I put my omnibuses behind me, so I feel like you would have noticed eventually.
Yeah.
But what did you read, Nathan? Did you get a chance to read anything since Wednesday?
Yeah. No, we're trying to do a book a day, so I read 4 books because we're doubling up a couple stuff. But I read the Vigilante Eagly book, the number one.
Yeah.
That came out with the James Gunn, you know, Tim Seeley, Mitch Gerrards, and then there's another creative team for the Eagly portion of it. I didn't realize that was how this story was going to work, but it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. I haven't read that yet.
It's fun. It definitely feels like the crassness of the show. So, and like the kind of ridiculousness of like the vigilante character, but it's very clearly like adapting it from the show. I was kind of curious how they're going to handle that, even though I figured it was probably going to be that way. But, you know, Mitch draws the actor that plays Vigilante in the show, and it's like, he has a really interesting style with him.
Okay.
So it's fun. And it's fun to see Mitch Gerrards do like sort of more comedy sort of acting and stuff as well. Because he's kind of a silly character. And, you know, seeing Mitch just draw John Cena, I'm like, this is bizarre.
Yeah.
But, you know, the story itself is kind of like, once I read it, I was like, this makes sense for a vigilante story. And then there's an Eagly portion of it, which is also a pretty fun artist. That was a fun portion of it as well. I don't think I'll get the next one just because there's a lot of books right now, but I think it's a fun issue. And it was cool. We met Mitch Gerrards, but he came to do a signing at the shop. So we got that signed, which is pretty sweet. I also read Absolute Martian Manhunter. Matteo Lolli.
Yeah. Sorry, what were you reading? Right.
I read Absolute Martian Manhunter, probably my most anticipated book so far this year, I would say.
Yeah.
You read it too, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Like, it's like a lot. I didn't really know what to expect. I tried to like not, you know anything really going into it.
I think it's like exactly what I expected.
Yeah. Based
off of what they showed us, you know?
I don't know what they're doing with it yet, which is cool. Like, I like the mystery there.
I think I do.
Well, I just don't know the relationship between this detective and like Martian Manhunter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I thought they were one and the same, but, and like, they might be. But, you know, at the same time, you know, the art on it is pretty incredible. There's like a lot of representation of like reading people's minds, but like not really knowing how to control it. And it seems very stressful. And so when he kind of spirals into like those pages, I think Javier Rodriguez was doing some pretty incredible stuff. You know, it's not afraid to be colorful either, which I really enjoy.
Yeah, I think the best part.
And I can honestly say like the last page is something that I've never seen anybody do in comics before. And it was really cool.
It's kind of gimmicky.
No, I thought it was great. I'm like, this is something I can honestly say I've never seen someone do before. So I thought
like,
it was cool.
Okay, blah, blah, blah. I just thought it was like meh, you know, because like, I think if this came out, I don't know. I almost wish I like read it without like seeing the cover, even, you know, like just be able to like experience it without having any idea of like what it could be, and then that would. I'd like it way more because I'd be like, what the fuck is this? It's so weird, you know? But like when you see like all this like promotion and like the covers and stuff, you kind of get an idea of like what it is.
And yeah, you kind of know,
like forgetting like how weird it is for it to be like this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's really well done. Great art and whatnot.
Yeah, I think it's cool. And then I read the Saga 71 and 72.
Okay.
So I think I'm like officially caught up on Saga.
You are. Congratulations. You're ahead of me. I haven't read 72 yet.
What a fucking fake fan you are. You know what I mean?
Did you read We Take Everyone Down With Us?
No, I haven't yet.
Yeah, I read that. It's pretty good. It's not quite what I thought it was, or like how it was like sold to me, but really good stuff. Really well done. I was like just kind of not really feeling it, you know? And then like I read the last page and I'm like, ah, they got me. I'm like, fuck.
I love those books.
I'm going for two, you know? So
like, ah, they got me back in.
So yeah, it's good. I liked it.
I plan on reading that. There's a couple of really exciting books out right now that I'm excited to read. I feel like I'm in, like, the comics this year have been pretty stellar. I feel like.
Yeah, it's been exciting so far. I read The Deviant number 9.
Oh, nice.
So the last issue of that.
Yep, finally came out.
Yeah. I don't know if it was necessarily worth, like, the wait, but it was like, good. It was, like, an ending that you couldn't necessarily, like, predict. And I thought it was, like, well done. I, like, reading it, I'm like, oh, this is such a good book. Like, just the way it, like, looks really good. It's just put together really well. There's a part that I thought was funny. You remember, like, the FBI agent who's, like, always vaping?
Yeah, the vaping guy, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, he knows that someone's, like, leaving this bar as he's, like, arriving. And they're like, the killer, he's in there. And he's like, and then he tells the guy, like, go call the police. He, like, goes up to the door. He's like, and then goes in. I thought it was so fucking funny. Just one last hit in case he dies.
Gotta make it a good one.
He's like in like the bar and he's like breathing out the smoke.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm like, he's true to himself.
That's funny.
But yeah, I think it, I'm not like telling you need to like read like volume 2, but if you want to enjoy comics the same amount that you did the first one, I think the second trade is like, it's consistent.
Right.
So
that's cool. I mean, I think that's good. Like the Joshua Hickson stuff on that first trade that we read is really, really strong, I feel like.
Yeah, so he's awesome. If he
keeps that up, then that's cool.
I need him on lots of stuff.
Yeah, totally. I got my Joshua Hickson work up there. Can't see it, but
we can't see it.
Bit of a flex. I just see the Moon Knight one.
Yeah, when you export it, it won't show in like the frame. So
yeah,
it's like you don't have it actually.
I'll go get it. Nah, I don't want to.
Who is at the bar with us last night?
Our name's Patience.
That's weird because I actually read a book called Patience.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's been on your shelf for a bit.
Yeah, I like this back cover a lot, actually.
That should be the main one.
Yeah, I know. This is by Daniel Klaus. It's actually kind of thick. It's like 170 pages.
Yeah. You read that whole thing?
Yeah, it was like, I read it like over like last week.
Oh, okay.
So I was listening to a podcast and Stephen Colbert brought Daniel Klaus up.
What the hell?
And it was on David Cross's podcast. And he was saying that like he loved like Daniel Klaus's like last three books. I'm like, you read comics, you know?
David Cross seems like the kind of guy that would.
Yeah. And then I looked up interviews and I guess Daniel Klaus was on like Mark Maron's podcast. And they were talking about this book like when it came out in like 2016. And this is like a Fantagraphics book. And that's like kind of the stuff that he does, like indie stuff.
Right.
He kind of has like a zine kind of like style to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of captions and whatnot. It's like kind of wordy, but like not, it's got like good flow to it. I picked up this one like a year ago, maybe, because I was looking up like trippy books. And this is one that came up. This is like a double page spread that I thought was like kind of neat.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's
like, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's like a murder mystery kind of thing where this dude, he's like trying to like solve his wife's murder, but using like a time machine that he doesn't know how to use, you know?
So, I like that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It actually ends pretty well. It's a little slow as far as like me figuring out like what the charm of like or the nuance to Daniel Klaus books are. You know, I think I when you hear like all these endorsements, I'm like, all right, what are people like into? Like, what are they talking about kind of thing?
Yeah.
And I think it's just like really good like storytelling and whatnot. And I thought it ended pretty well. And it's just great visuals and whatnot. And I guess this book is like one of his like toned down as far as detail in the artwork.
Really?
So, yeah, I've kind of Been trying to like get into his stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
His name's Daniel. I'm partial to it. So.
Got a support. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm not exactly even sure how it ended. Like, I don't know if I understand what happened, you know? And I'm like, I think I know, but there's no way to like confirm that I'm right, you know?
Right. That's funny. It seems interesting. Yeah, it seems like a healthy kind of indie book for the soul.
Yeah. That was kind of what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. Did you watch anything new?
No, but I played a new game.
Okay.
It's one that's been out for a while that I have like vague awareness of. It's called Inscription. It's on like Game Pass and stuff like that. And I recommend it, but like it was on my radar because people talk about it and they like can't talk about it without spoiling like what the twist of the game is in general. And I was like, that's kind of interesting.
I think I heard about this.
At the surface, it's like a card game, like a card deck builder game with like really creepy vibes. And I've only played it for 2 or 3 hours now. And the game mechanic itself is like pretty fun. And I'm starting to uncover like the mystery, but I can't tell if the twist is something that like I've already discovered. But it's just like, it's a lot more than what it leads on to be. And it's so interesting. But I don't know, it's been out for a while, so I'll just kind of tell you what I've experienced so far. But you're just like in this cabin with this dude that it's like a dark room, so you can only see his eyes. And whenever he talks, they turn into like weird, like swirly sort of orange eyes. Okay. And so vibes are like really fucking creepy.
Yeah.
And the card game itself is just like you get different animals and you have to like put them on there's like four lanes. And if there's not an animal to stop your animal from attacking, then it takes away your life. And then there's like sacrificing and stuff in the game. But as you're like playing it and you're getting more cards and stuff like that, the guy is like, when you first die, you get killed in real life and then resurrected and you're just in the cabin still. But then you can walk around the cabin. And I think there's things that you figure out throughout the course of the game to figure out how to escape. But you have to do it in a manner that doesn't trip off like the dude, like this like shadowy figure. You know what I mean? So you're like stuck in a cabin and I'm looking at like the rules of the game. And as I'm like trying to figure out what this specific card does, there's like a code. And I'm like, oh, there's a safe over there that has 3 digits and there's 3 digits here that seem out of place. And so I like go to the safe like secretively and put in the safe thing and it works and like opens up a thing and I get a new card and the card's like talking to me and stuff like that. So it's like a really trippy experience. And there's a lot of stuff I haven't figured out yet, but are really interesting. Like there's a random door that has like flashing lights like on the other side of it, like kind of coming through the bottom of the door and just kind of like out the seams. So the game's really good at directing you without feeling like it's holding your hand necessarily.
That's
so
good.
I really enjoy the concept of it so far.
It's just like a solo game.
Yeah, solo game. You know, it's really fucking creepy. And like there's times where when I'm going to enter in the safe code, I'm like, if this motherfucker pops up behind me right now, I'm gonna shit my pants. So like it creates an environment that's like really kind of creepy. And I feel like there's going to be a bigger twist to come because I haven't unlocked all the things yet. But yeah, super enjoyable experience.
Nice.
So definitely a good supporter of like an indie game if you want to do that. It's on Game Pass if you have that. I think the game itself is only like $5, but they did a lot with little and I kind of like those games. So I'm enjoying it so far.
Nice. I watched a show called The Studio. On
Apple
Plus.
Yeah, the Seth Rogen one?
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard good things.
Yeah, it's interesting so far. It's like, I think the way he sells it is like, everything's just like the bear now, you know, with like stress inducing, you know, and like anxiety watches and whatnot. But he's like a studio head for like a film company or whatever. And it's like, he just got like the big job and like everything's going like wrong, you know, it seems like. Mm. And he's like really bad at his job, and he's kind of like a super unlikable character just because like he just fucks up a lot, you know. Mm. He like gives up his values and whatnot just to make the boss happy and shit like that.
Right.
But there was the second episode, they had like a 2-episode premiere, is like the whole episode's a one-er, which is like one shot, no cuts. you know?
Oh, cool.
And that episode is about them going on set, where in the movie that they're filming in the show, there's also a oneer that keeps getting messed up. What, so it's like this super meta thing. And he's the one that basically keeps fucking up the oneer that they're doing in the show or in the movie. And
so it's a oneer of them trying to do a oneer in a movie. Exactly. But they keep fucking it up.
And so that's imagine awesome. Fucking filming that, you know?
Imagine actually fucking it up. You know what I mean? Like, do you think he fucked up fucking up the fuck up? You know what I mean? Absolutely. And it's like, yeah. They just go with it.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, it's pretty good. I like it. But this last one, like, Sarah, like, couldn't watch it because of like how much shit is like just getting fucked up. You know, she
couldn't watch it because it was like, yeah, embarrassed.
Yeah, there's like secondhand embarrassment, cringe things, and like Seth Rogen's being like annoying. You know, he's like getting good feedback, so he thinks people like him, but actually, people didn't even want him on set at all that day. You know, right. So he just like won't leave and just like causing problems. He doesn't like, he's not really like aware of like how annoying he's being.
Gotcha.
So.
That's interesting because I got the concept that he was going to be more of a character that like is in this position and wants art to like good art to succeed in like a environment where there's like every franchise, everything has to be like a franchise that like makes $1 billion or whatever.
That's what but he it seems wants, like he's, but
yeah,
he still has that to like been... answer to like a boss, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But it seems good. I mean, a lot of people are kind of talking about it, and I'm definitely, it's definitely piqued my interest. But if I get Apple Plus, I have to do Severance, so it'll be a while before I get to it, I think. But
yeah, it's only like $10.
I need to get your password for that.
I'll give you the mom's got the password.
All right, I'll get the password.
And then we watched Death of a Unicorn.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, last night.
Last night, still fresh on the nog.
It's been described as A24's Jurassic Park.
Really?
By bold, you know, Letterboxd reviewers.
That's crazy.
I think it kind of gives that vibe for sure.
I didn't really know anything about this going in. I just knew it was kind of like Paul Rudd, Jenna Ortega, A24. And I'm like, hell yeah, let's do it. And like unicorns, stuff like that. And it's an enjoyable movie, but I think it lacks something that A24 typically brings. And I don't really know what it is. You know, I think in general, like the concept of it's pretty fun and I enjoyed myself. But it's a horror comedy, but I don't think it particularly excels at either one of those things necessarily.
Yeah.
Because they have really great comedic talent and really great dramatic talent, but no one like really gets the space to breathe in those particular areas.
Sure.
But what I do like about it is that seeing Paul Rudd in a horror situation is kind of funny. Like seeing him have to like run away from something.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess not.
So I like that people are kind of doing things that are different from outside what they normally do, but there's parts of it where it's like, oh, this is the comedy part, you know what I mean? And NoHo Hank is like supposed to make a funny face, you know, and like say, I don't want to do that kind of thing. But like I've laughed way harder at different Paul Rudd things or like at different NoHo Hank things, whatever his name is, or just like pretty much all those characters.
Will Poulter
fucking rules in this movie.
He definitely shined in this.
Yeah, I think he acts circles around everybody. Mm-hmm. Just because like that's the nature of his character, is just a goof who's like too overconfident and stuff like that.
I thought everyone was like acting like 10 out of 10 at this, you know, as far as like
really
what it is. I thought they were like all going for it, you know.
Yeah they were all
like boring.
Yeah I would agree with that too. I think the unicorn design is pretty awesome too. It's just, you know, really interesting trying to see it and trying to figure out how it works, because there's like it's not like just a horse with a horn, you know, there's things that are kind of magical going on around it, and trying to discover what that is, I think is pretty interesting. But I don't think they answer all the questions necessarily.
Like what?
Really, like the only one that I didn't really understand why they put it in is like there's lights that are in the sky that kind of make it seem like what do they call that?
Like an apocalypse?
No, it's like, I don't know, the northern lights. There's like northern lights type lights that are like in the sky. And I assume that's just like where the unicorns kind of are vaguely. But I thought that was going to be like something more than that.
It kind of made it seem like it was like a time factor. Like they kept looking at it. And as it got like bigger, like as if they're running out of time or something.
Yeah.
But
I wasn't. Yeah, it seemed. Yeah. just it was approaching or like something was coming up and you should feel weird about it. But what I think is interesting about it, or where I think it kind of falls, or just an inconsistency, is when you first hear the unicorn, it sounds like kind of a horse mixed with something else, you know? But then they just kind of bail on that idea. And when you see the unicorn from then on, it's just typical horror movie, like, monster noise. And it doesn't sound like a horse anymore. It just makes monster noise. You know what I mean?
That's like when they're angry.
I know, but then they don't, like, go back to the cute, majestic horse noise. You know what I mean? And so I'm like, I wish that's what the baby one sounded like.
Was more horsey.
Yeah, that could be true too, but I don't know.
I thought the blending of genres like worked, because like I think when you have like a genre movie, then you're kind of just focusing on like the one thing that that genre does. But like having mm-hmm. like all these different like elements in it, even with like fantasy and stuff like that, it's like a little bit of everything to kind of fill in like the runtime. So I don't think it necessarily had to be. I think I kind of enjoy stuff like that, where it's like mm-hmm. a bit of everything in a way. But it has like just enough comedy to me think it's a funny movie, and just enough like tense moments to think where a lot of shit can be like actually kind of scary. There are some parts that like got me on this, you know?
Really?
I don't know. It's just like I wasn't like looking at it. I was like playing into like probably how they wanted me to watch it, you know? And I wasn't like trying to think about what was gonna happen next.
Oh.
And so
okay.
As that was going, I just like let it play out. Like it some things where I'm like, fuck, okay. You know, yeah. And I thought they did pretty good at like the making like a unicorn like scary, you know?
Yeah, I think they did really well with that. The design of it, I think, is definitely a highlight. I was watching it and I was kind of trying to figure out, or like not even figure out, but like just kind of assume what happens next. And you know, for the most part, it's not like they're trying to trick you with very much of this movie, so
yeah,
it leaves it to be kind of a predictable movie.
Sure.
But not really in like a bad way, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting watch. I think this would have been like, if this was like just on stream, I would have been like, this would have been a good, you know, movie, you know what I mean? But watching it in theaters, I'm like, I probably could have waited for streaming.
Sure.
At the same time. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was fun. I like seeing Paul Rudd do different things other than just like, well, I guess he is this in this movie too, where he's just white guy trying to figure it all out and keep things together. You know what I mean?
He's pretty like unlikable though, which I don't think we see a lot of.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, which is interesting. Like, I get his motivations and what he's like ultimately trying to do, but he's kind of misdirected in how he should be approaching things. So. But Jenna Ortega, I think, was really good in this, too.
Yeah, she always is just kind of, like, going for it and does really well, yeah. I think.
There's a lot of, like, there's, like, a good crying scene with her. And I was like, this is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, so. Spoilers for, like, the end. But, like, Paul Rudd, like, gets, like, stabbed. And there's, she's, like, describing, like, this trippy moment she had with, like, the unicorn. And the way she described that to kind of, like, comfort her dad as he was, like, dying, I thought was so good. Just compared to like other things like that, other like death scenes or whatever. I just thought it was really good. It like got to me. I was getting teared up. I'm like, oh, here we go. I didn't think it was gonna end well necessarily, but I thought that like went well.
Yeah, I was like, how do we wrap this up necessarily? But yeah, to the ending, I'm like, it ended, and I'm like, this would have just been better if they never hit the unicorn in the first place. You know, it's not like their interaction with the unicorn helped the unicorns in any way or helped people in any way other than just like, I don't know, killing a couple billionaires.
Yeah. I mean,
so the unicorns just like happened to, you know, be able to just keep living their lives, I guess.
Yeah. Like undo everything.
But if they never hit the unicorn in the beginning, it's like none of this, nothing would have been changed overall. You know, they wouldn't have discovered the cure for cancer anyway. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. But even though they like had it, it's not like they have it now, you know?
Yeah. I think Paul Rudd in real life found a unicorn, because that dude looks the same. Like, ever since he's been in movies, he's looked the same.
Yeah.
Much. So he must have found some... He must have got some unicorn blood on him in real life.
Yeah, same with, like, the mom in this movie. What was her name?
The actress?
Yeah.
It is Tia Leone,
Yeah. She looks like the same.
Dude, yeah, I know. I was like, she looks younger than like I feel like the last thing I've seen her in, and I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Which is like Foam, Dick, and Jane. I'm like, wow. You know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I think Will Poulter kills this as well. He's just like the most entertaining person on the screen. And like I think probably the funniest joke that gets me the most is when they discover that it like cures cancer, and Will Poulter's like, that's the biggest one.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a good joke. I like that. And like his delivery of it's good too. But yeah, it's a fun movie overall. I definitely recommend, like, it's worth the watch for sure.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would necessarily be like disappointed by it, you know?
Yeah.
It's getting like a little bit of heat, but.
But I think of like A24 movies and stuff like that, it's just like a little bit different. And so it won't be one of those movies that I think sits with you for like a while, like a Hereditary or something like that would.
Yeah, I can't imagine it like ranks very high in like the all of A24 ranking, you know, yeah. But.
You see people doing like the A24 like March Madness brackets.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, it's just going to be Hereditary or Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like, basically. We don't have to do this.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, fun movie.
Yeah, Nathan, I want to throw some ideas at you.
Okay.
It's like unnecessary sequels to like perfect comics. I was coming up with like some names and some concepts. So I have a sequel to Watchmen. It's called Watch They Them. It's a woke sequel.
Okay, good. Because the first one wasn't woke.
Exactly.
The first one was pro-war in every sense of the word.
Mm-hmm. We have Superman for All Signs. It's all the different horoscopes, you know? And he, I don't really have a concept for it, but not just season. It's all the signs. Mercury's in retrograde and how Superman reacts to that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Am I supposed to pick one that after all of these will happen?
No.
Or you just kind of came up with ideas?
I don't think any of these would happen. I just thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah, okay.
Batman, The Long Thanksgiving Weekend. So, you know, the following holiday, after Halloween, he spends a Thanksgiving with his in-laws, the Al Ghuls, you know? And just how that ensues.
I like that idea.
Okay, yeah.
I think that's worthy.
There's something there.
Man, I wish Tim Sale was still with us.
Oh, yeah. The comebacks. It's like the Runaways, but they just like come back.
It's like, oh, hey.
Yeah.
Where'd you guys go?
You're back.
Welcome. That's funny.
Green Lantern, The Bigger, Blacker Night.
I like that.
Yeah.
Even scarier. You gotta up the stakes somehow.
Yeah, it just keeps getting bigger, you know.
The blackest of nights.
So we got a sequel to Preacher. But it's called Atheist. Whoa. And instead of using the voice of God, Jesse Custer uses science and reason to get people to do things.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
bring up some stats, maybe.
Exactly. Why the Last Grandpa? So when they're repopulating Earth, everyone is like half siblings. You know how like if like the dude, why? If he's...
Mm-hmm.
If he has like a bunch of kids, all those kids with different moms, they're all going to be half siblings.
Oh, I see. I see what you mean. So it's still the same guy, but he's just grandpa now.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that.
Right.
As a sequel.
We have Fables. It's just rebooted. It's like a new story with like the newest public domain editions.
That'd be sick.
Yeah. So
Winnie the Pooh.
Winnie the Pooh. You have the new Mickey or the old Mickey or whatever. Mickey.
Fucking Superman.
Exactly.
First Superman. I don't think he's public domain yet, but pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. We have the Sandman, and it's just Adam Sandler, and he has Morpheus powers. And he turns the dreaming, like that place where he lives, it's just like he just turns into Hawaii, you know?
Yeah. A vacation shoot spot.
Exactly.
That'd be good.
We have four kids walk into a credit union.
Yes.
And instead of robbing the bank, they open high yield savings accounts.
Because they get their credit started early.
Right.
What is it, the dad that went to jail? He just does community service and gets out on good behavior.
Yeah. He got out early. Wait, the dad went to jail?
There is like somebody went to jail, didn't they? Or someone was about to go to jail?
I don't remember. I think the kids would. I guess anyway, I need to read that.
I like that. I like the idea of them getting their credit started early. You almost need that now. The housing market now. You almost need that now with how the housing market is.
Exactly.
What about Batman?
Oh, you got any ideas?
Instead of Batman Hush, it's Batman.
We already got Scream. Hush 2, you know, so it has an unnecessary sequel.
Oh, yeah, true. I guess they beat me to it. But instead of Hush, it would have been him being really loud.
Yeah.
What are we going to read next week, Daniel?
Back matters.
We're going to read Scooby Apocalypse.
Oh.
Yes, sir. For my birthday book. I forgot
already.
It's going to be the best.
You've been trying to get me to read this for so long, and I've been trying to avoid it for so long.
Yeah, but I got it's shot your birthday. Down, and so I'm like, I'll just save that for me or something, and then I don't.
It's your birthday. I have to read whatever you say.
I normally pick books that I hear are bad, or I've experienced and thought were bad. I don't think this will be bad. I just picked it because I know you didn't want to read it. You know,
I specifically don't care for this really at all. When it was coming out, I was like, yeah, I guess. You know what I mean? But like,
you didn't have like any interest. You weren't like, oh, interesting. You know?
No.
Wow. Okay.
Leave it. Leave it alone, Hanna-Barbera.
That's how we differ.
Yeah.
Well, they're still making new Scooby-Doo comics. So it's like, it's not like.
Yeah, it's fine. But they're not in the fucking future or whatever. I don't even know what this is about. But I just like, they were changing everything. And I was like, we didn't need to do this. You know what I mean?
Everything could benefit from a good reboot.
Perhaps, maybe I'll be wrong, but I have a strong inclination that tells me that I won't be wrong. So we'll see.
Alrighty. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching, everybody. We'll have more in-person episodes if you didn't like this for some reason. I think it's fine.
Yeah, if you didn't like this, we'll follow up via email and I'll send you a little survey, customer satisfaction survey. If you could fill that out, my manager would really appreciate it.
Yeah, report to HR.
Yeah.
Linktree in the bio, you can like, comment, subscribe, stuff like that. Email in, tell us, have you played Last of Us? Is it good? I don't know.
Tell us if you think the weekend's too short.
TradeRaidersPod@gmail.com.
Yes, sir.
And goodbye.
Peace.